CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Lee Coulter will be telling us a little bit about sledge hockey. So what can you tell me about your work with sledge hockey?
Yeah, it started about 10 years ago with me just trying it for the first time. I have a spinal cord injury, and it's a fairly high-level spinal cord injury, and I wasn't sure whether I'd even be able to play the sport just because it's T5, which is pretty high up, so just below my chest. So I don't really have much in the way of trunk muscles, and I'm 6'5", so I have really long legs, and getting from floor to chair was always a challenge for me. So so I didn't think anything about getting down into a sled or a sledge on the ice would work for me. And it wasn't until I had a fluke by chance meeting with somebody at a local restaurant that she wasn't even our waitress. She came up to the table and said, "Hey, can I talk to you for a second?" And specifically me, and asked me if I'd ever heard of sledge hockey. Yeah. At the time, it was 2014, so I remember from the Vancouver Olympics and Paralympics that I'd seen it on TV and I'd heard of it, but that was the only extent of it. And of course, you're looking at the very top level, the upper echelon of talent and sport there. So looking at that, I don't think too many people, too many lay people would look at it and think that they're going to be able to do that. So she gave me some reassurance. She let me know that her grandfather, same level injury as me, when I let her know, when she asked me, has been the goaltender on the team for 30 years. So just come on out, give it a try. We'll have people there that can help you. There's ways we can get you in and out of the chair. So I think I emailed her back and forth probably about 6 times. She only worked at that restaurant for 1 month. I used to go to the restaurant quite frequently, and it had been a year. So it was one of these one of these fluke fate almost things, serendipitous moments that got me involved in sledge, and I got there and tried it out. You can actually adjust the blades on the sledge to go wider for people who need more lateral stability, which I did, and right away I got in there and was able to do what I wanted to do. I used to play sports prior to my accident, so I was always worried that my mind would know what it wants to do, my body wouldn't cooperate, and I'd get really frustrated, but thankfully that wasn't the case. I started playing sledge in 2014. Within a couple of years, I went for my coaching certification through Hockey Canada, and I also took over as team manager and was named team captain of the Markham Islanders just before COVID. So I've been involved with them. This will be my 10th season going in this year. And as you know from our conversations, it's been looking after, doing a lot of the communications and logistics for the team. And it's one of the most inclusive sports I've ever been a part of or seen. I wish I had started, I'd done it sooner. My accident was back in 1994, so it had been quite a few years. I was more focused on writing and music and things along those lines as opposed to sports, but it was great to find a piece of myself again and be able to, enjoy the team sport and playing hockey again in this form. And it's all ages, all levels of abilities. There's half of our league is able-bodied, half of our team is able-bodied. There's kids as young as, they can be as young as 5 or so, but we had a player on one of our teams that was 7, and another player that's as old as 73. He's turning 73 on the weekend. So and men, women, everybody all playing together. So it is just incredible. to be part of something like that, so, and to serve the community, people with disabilities and as well as able-bodied. So it's a great way to, it's the great equalizer. Everybody's sitting down and playing the same sport the same way.
So what are some of the key benefits for an athlete coming in and with or without a disability for getting involved in this sport? I'd imagine the community aspect is a big one, in so much as having the able body play alongside those with disabilities.
Yes. There's obviously the fitness element for everybody. There's all of the other benefits that come along with playing a team sport. The same way that you would encourage children to pick up hockey, at a young age, it's regardless of your age, it's just amazing to be just to be a part of the disabled community, or anybody, just to have just the local community as well too, right? We're based out of Markham. The other teams nearest to us are in Durham and out in the West End of Mississauga in Oakville. There's just not enough players or people with disabilities to really have, say, a house league or something local. So you do get a sense of community for sure when your catchment is basically, for us, it's all of York region and most of the GTA from the East End and anything central. So it's you really do pull people in from a greater area than just your own. So and I know for myself, because I wasn't really into too many sports to start off with after having my accident, most of my friends were still my able-bodied friends from prior to accident, from school, and neighborhood, and everything. So it really got me in touch with other members of the disabled community, and just for the other folks too, they just got a chance to cross generations, right? I mean, the age is so desperate. Like, how it's so amazing to have a sport where you actually will have something in common with people generations younger or older than you. Like, typically you might, you might say hello or have a small conversation with somebody who's your parents' friend's age, or if you're a parent yourself, then maybe you say a few words to your kids' friends and stuff like that. But to actually be on the same team as them, to kind of have that sort of ribbing each other or having that those generational gaps and allegiances to whatever team. And I was alive last time the Leafs won the cup. Things along those lines. It's like I said, it's really, there's that benefit as well too. You really do have, it's a sense of community. It's a sense of teamwork. There's obviously, there's leadership qualities that you develop. There's we have players that are also on the autism spectrum as well. So I mean, it's so just the socialization that the players get, regardless of their ability. There's so many great things, and it's a big family as well too. We are having a barbecue, and it's all friends and family going. We have over 30 people attending, plus the family that's organizing it and their friends as well. So it's you really do bond together, and all the travel that's involved as well from being so spread out. It's our league is Ontario wide. We have teams all the way from Windsor to Ottawa, down to Buffalo, and as far north as North Bay. And although they haven't been in the league lately, they've been taking parts in the tournament, and so it's great just to be able to travel around and see these other places and play these other teams and go to the tournaments as well. There's a couple of huge ones that are in London, Ontario, and in Brampton every year, and as well as a smaller one that's out in Ottawa after the season leads.
So in your time with the sport, is there any success moment or memory that stands out for you?
It's a good question. There's quite a few that stand out, and I think a lot of them, there's the micro and the macro scale. For instance, just the Ottawa tournament that I was mentioning, we managed to finally capture the white whale, I guess, for lack of a better hyperbole, but it was great. We played against a team from North Bay, and they've always done really, really well against us. The most we were able to manage was a couple of ties against them, to 20 something losses between tournaments and leagues over the length of time that I was playing against them. And we had a nice team that was a good blend of younger and newer players and some veterans as well. So just to get that chance to go up and finally beat the play against that team and win was great. We've our open team, so our there's a few different divisions within the Ontario Sledge Hockey Association. There's a junior division, which is typically 15 years and under. There's the rest are all ages. We have an open division, which is no body checking. There's an intermediate division that does have body checking, and it's subdivided up into an A, B, and C level. So it was, we all had a team, we put players into the open division, and it was really great to be able to win that game, and also for the Open team to beat the team that won the championship as well at the same tournament. So we had that. Our Open team won gold in the London tournament. We had three medals this past year. So there's year over year, there's usually some achievements along those lines, whether it's at tournaments or whether it's for the league itself. Both of our teams ended up with bronze this past season in the league playoffs. And and in the process, we actually beat a couple of teams that we'd had trouble against as well, historically speaking. So it was great. Like I said, it's with every sport, it's a roller coaster. There's always your ups and downs, but there's been quite a few instances like that. And I think just seeing the development as well, as somebody who's taken over doing some assistant coaching and running practices, we had a young guy who's just 16 now, but he started when he was 10 or 11. And just to watch him progress and just go from being a practice player to joining our intermediate team this year and to having a season where he started out with 3 points in the first five games of the year and then ending up with 9 points in the last three games after having a great tournament in between there. It was great. And just seeing that a lot of our players can move on to Team Ontario. From there, then you would get scouted to Team Canada. And we had a goalie that joined us this year from Kingston, and she was playing her first full year of intermediate, and she was on the radar and got called up to Women's Team Canada team. So it's been great just seeing some of our own teammates and some of our own get up there and achieve these great things individually, and you feel a part of that too. So it's a lot of, there's so many wins beyond the game and within the game.
Like, thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you could stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, absolutely.
In this segment of our show, Troy Greason will be telling us a little bit about CFC syndrome. So what can you tell me about CFC International?
So this organization was established approximately 25 years ago. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary this year. It was shortly after the syndrome was actually discovered, cardiofaciocutaneous syndrome, was discovered by a combination of scientists and doctors and parents who collectively noticed that there were some differences in their children at birth that were different from other syndromes that were that had already been identified. And so our organization over these years has been the only organization that serves the population, children, mostly children with cardiofaciocutaneous syndrome, their families, and other supporters. We do that through our mission is basically built around supporting these children in a variety of ways, as well as we conduct and fund a lot of research that's critically needed, as well as advocacy and awareness and education. That's our primary mission.
So what are some of the common impacts of the syndrome?
First and foremost, it's in its name, cardio. So a lot of heart issues come with it. Irregular beats, oftentimes stoppage, and even clogged arteries that are related at birth and continue on throughout their lives. So heart issues, heart disease is number one. The fascio, those are basically in the name, those are basically skin issues, skin disorders, a variety of skin, nails, hair. There's unique physical traits that come with that are you can visibly see, but also challenges, issues with all with those skin, hair, and nails. And that goes along with the cutaneous part of it as well, with the facial features and the cutaneous issues are often very similar and related with a unique look. If you saw a child, once you see a typical child visibly, you'd notice, oh, I've probably seen one of those individuals before just by their unique facial features that come along with it. Little or no hair on the eyebrows or face at all. Typically enlarged eyes, enlarged forehead, and again with the cutaneous, oftentimes very curly hair, and thin hair, difficult to manage, but those are most of the symptoms that go along with it. In addition, there are a multitude of other complications that typically come, sleep disorders. Epilepsy is huge. It's the number one cause of death, unfortunately, with our children. Average age oftentimes is anywhere from 12 to 18. Very few live beyond those ages, although we are learning and identifying more and more adults now. But typically, seizures and epilepsy is a major cause of issues and oftentimes death. Eating is an issue. Many are on G-tubes. And are constantly battling that digestive system. And the vast majority also have severe intellectual disabilities as well, special needs, sometimes even autism.
Do you know offhand about how many people are affected by the syndrome?
That's still a major study for us to find out. We have signed with us that have identified with us just over 1,000. Predominantly that's in the U.S., but we have many out in other countries that we're aware of. And so we estimate there could easily be upwards of 5,000 in this rare disease around the world. It is almost daily new identification. We're finding more and more that there are a lot of misdiagnosed out there, and those are being adjusted as they get identified. And our biggest challenge is really with genetics, that most geneticists, even here in the U.S. and in North America and developed countries, in the U.K. and Australia and Canada and others, most geneticists aren't aware of CFC syndrome. So to get identified even at birth or in the first place is a huge challenge. And then, as I said, oftentimes they'll get misdiagnosed as well.
So, in your time promoting awareness and advocacy of the syndrome, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
We've been a lot in the field of just overall disabilities. That's intellectual developmental disabilities and special needs. We've had some success in bringing these children into that fold, into that broader spectrum, including, as I said earlier, a lot with autism. So it's been a good success for us to identify with these bigger organizations and under the broader umbrella of intellectual and developmental disabilities, IDD, because that's obviously huge in bringing more awareness specifically to our syndrome and all the complications that go with it. So that's been big. We do a lot of advocacy with government as far as rare disease. There are many rare diseases out there, and there's a network of us organizations that manage these rare diseases, and so that's another arena where we've had some success with advocacy. That's the bulk of it. We're very, very limited in identifying, helping a better identification of this syndrome. That's our biggest, another one of our big challenges.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yes, sir.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Blood donors are needed now as much as ever. If you would like to help meet the needs of patients across Canada, please consider booking an appointment by calling 1-800-2-DONATE. That is 1-800-236-6283, or by visiting blood.ca or through the Give Blood app. The Windsor Blood Donation Centre location is at 3909 Grand Maris Road East. Make a difference with the Canadian Blood Services.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Lee Coulter told us a little bit about sledge hockey, and we heard about CFC syndrome from Troy Greason.
In this segment of our show, Kelly Sinclair will be telling us a little bit about Highlands Nordic. So what can you tell me about Highlands Nordic?
Yeah, so we are located in Duntroon, which is about 15 minutes south of Collingwood. We are a cross-country ski resort with trails for both classic and skate skiing, snowshoeing. We also have a dog-friendly ski trail, so we keep pretty busy with a lot of different activities with the public, as well as we also do a lot of school groups.
So I understand you have a para program.
So para Nordic skiing is, there's a lot of different pieces of para Nordic skiing. There are sit skiers, there are standing skiers, which could be somebody who is visually impaired or doesn't have full use of an arm usually, otherwise they would be using a sit ski. So that is sort of what different branches of para Nordic skiing is. Highlands Nordic, we've got sit skis that people are welcome to come up and use. At this point, we don't have necessarily like an established coach at the moment, which is kind of hard. That is always one of the factors with any type of program, including para Nordic, is always trying to find a coach who is willing and able to volunteer their time. But we do have the knowledge to sort of get people started. We also, as I said, have sit skis available for people to rent. And for anybody who is a visually impaired skier and has somebody who is willing to assist them as a guide, we can definitely provide some training and insight to that guide to get them started.
So what are some of the benefits for someone with a disability being out there and being able to participate in para Nordic? I mean, gotta imagine that being out in nature has a strong calming effect, certainly.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, that is across the board for anybody, I would say. One thing that I think people who are looking to try para Nordic skiing, the winter is such a hard time to get out and to be able to enjoy being outside. And para skiing is such an awesome way to be able to do that, to get out, connect with nature, get some fresh air. One of the things that I always say about winter can not be fun for a lot of people, but if you find something that you enjoy doing outside during nature, during the winter time, I can guarantee you winter becomes a lot more fun for everybody involved.
So when it comes to para Nordic itself, is it as strong of an athletic commitment as the able-bodied equivalent? For someone with a disability, I take it requires a lot of time, training, and dedication just as much as it would anyone else.
Yeah, I would say that for sure. But, I mean, there are also recreational branches of para Nordic skiing. You know, it doesn't always have to be at a high-end level or at a competitive level in order to get out and enjoy para Nordic skiing. Yes, there is going to be some level of fitness that is required. Obviously, for the sit skiing, you know, you are propelling yourself with just your core and your arms. And so it is really nice and helpful to have somebody with you who can maybe help you get you know, up a hill if you need some extra assistance while you're still sort of building that that strength. Yes, for sure, it does require a little bit of fitness. But if you also do other activities that are, you know, working on your fitness, paranordic skiing just sort of slides into that in order to keep your physical health up.
So, in your time with the sport, has there been any story, historically speaking, that stands out for success moment?
That's a good question. I would say that for me, it's about the attitudes that I have seen over the years. I've worked with a lot of athletes, both able-bodied and para. And I would say that working with the para group is always so much more fun. The positive attitude that everybody has working together, trying something new potentially, it just feels like it's on another level. I find that is so important to try new things, putting yourself out of your comfort zone, and people who are trying paranordic skiing, that is so much more the case than an able-bodied skier. And so I would say for me, not a specific story, but just the general positivity and attitude that all the skiers have while trying something new. I would say the sport itself has really done well in the last couple of years. And I think that specifically like the national team right now, they're doing so well. They're really bringing a spotlight to the sport because of their success, and that success can trickle down the line and inspire other skiers.
Please continue.
Okay, so a couple of years ago, we had a blind school come to our facility. It was a group of about 10 to 15 students, and then our local high school, their gym class, came up. We did a presentation on guiding and how you can help the skier, things that you need to kind of do in terms of giving them, you know, what is coming, or if they were going down a hill, giving them some direction of we're turning to the left, or the snow is a bit uneven here. You need to kind of keep your feet moving, just things like that. So we did a presentation to the local high school, and then they came out and guided for the visually impaired school. And it was so neat to see these peers working together, teaching these skiers. They were relatively new to cross-country skiing as well. And so it was so cool to see. And we had a 3-to-1 ratio. There was 3 of the local high school students to 1 visually impaired student. And they worked together as a team. And it was just such a fun experience to see these high school students take something that they didn't have a lot of experience in and just give their full support. It was really great.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, no problem.
In the world of disability sports, I'm always fascinated by just how many adaptations can really be made. What's most important, my friends, is that we never stop thinking creatively, and that applies to all facets of disability life. The more we can innovate, the better the quality of life for persons with disabilities. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one.
Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.